Sup, freaks. This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an AirGAT fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q. Sup, freaks. Bitcoin is the ultimate scarce asset. Join Bitcoin macro expert Nick Bhatia at a live online event on March 17th for death, taxes, and 21 million. Learn how to shield your wealth, leverage tax-advantaged accounts, and secure your Bitcoin for future generations. Your financial advisor, accountant, or attorney might not be up to speed on Bitcoin, so invite them to join too. Register now at unchained.com/RHR. That's unchained.com/RHR. March 17th. Be there.
This rip was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. If you have friends, family members who are newbies, they still have their Bitcoin in the exchange, help them take the first step off the exchange. BitKey makes it very easy. It's a hardware device that has a multi-sig. You have the hardware device has a key. Your mobile phone app has a key. And Block has a key in the cloud. They've designed this with trade-offs to make it very hard to lose Bitcoin. Easy to use, hard to lose. Go to bitkey.world. Use the code RHR or RHR20 at checkout to get a discount. Not sure exactly which one it is yet. Try both. Go check it out. bitkey.world. Try RHR or RHR20. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC-free for completing the bounties. If you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats, go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Welcome, freaks. We're here for the post-crypto summit press conference commentary from Washington, D.C. I kid.
Isn't it going on right now?
Just wrapped up.
Yeah.
I was watching a live stream right before I hopped on here. A lot of crypto, a lot of blockchain, a lot of Web3. The Chainlink guy was pumping Web3.
There was a live stream of it?
There was.
Wow. That's a little bit weird.
Trump was there. Bissent saying we're going to buy more. The outside of Lutnick and Trump, who were very blockchainy crypto, Bissent was, we're going to try and buy more Bitcoin. We're going to fix the IRS rules. So that was bullish, at least.
What IRS rules is he fixing?
I don't know. Maybe cap gains tax. You know, you never know. That'd be sick.
I mean, the whole promise was that we were going to replace taxes with tariffs, and now we just have tariffs and taxes. So it'd be nice. It'd be nice if we could get rid of income tax and cap gains just across the board, not just for Bitcoin only.
It takes time, you know, it takes time.
Brian just zapped us 100,000 sats, fat zaps in the live chat. I'll listen back later to hear you talk twice as fast. Cheers, Brian. Appreciate the support.
Wow, Brian. That may be one of the largest zaps. What's our largest zap? I think 210,000 may be the largest zap we've ever received. Oh.
Do you have any other updates on the live stream? I didn't even I was at the Bitcoin Ski Summit this week. That was awesome.
No other updates. I just caught it on a little bathroom break down the hall. Caught the tail end. The Winklevi twins talked.
A couple but others. I'm a little bit of exhausted, which is why I'm moving slowly over here.
Hey, you take it easy. Chill Friday afternoon, tight hour rip. Logan informed us that our tight 1 hour rips average 80 minutes, so we'll see if we can come in under that. Kelly LaFleur.
We got Matt 21,000 sats. Thank you, Mav.
Thank you, Mav. Ride or die. Kelly LaFleur, Small Business Administration. There's a lot of room to implement blockchain in small businesses. They can succeed, or they can benefit from the implementation of blockchain. So government's still on blockchain and crypto. We're going to work on them. Slow steps. The Overton window has completely shifted.
Did you see what I named this episode?
Bitcoin Strategic Reserve.
Strategic Bitcoin Reserve.
Whatever, yeah. SBR. The SBR is here via executive order.
What is your
order.
Opinion on that? That happened yesterday.
I'm pleasantly surprised. In the sense that they clearly created a demarcation between Bitcoin and broader crypto. Beyond that, and that the two surprises were that demarcation, number one, and then number two, explicitly saying that the secretaries of commerce and treasury have the ability to buy more Bitcoin if it's not a net cost to taxpayers, which I wasn't expecting. I was expecting.
What does that mean?
They can sell assets that they hold for Bitcoin, essentially, I believe.
I forgot that Rob Hamilton was supposed to join this week.
Was he?
Yeah, because he was going to talk about the confirmation screen when you're setting up a Miniscript wallet.
I wasn't worried. You guys out of band agree to that?
No, we talked about it on air last week.
About him coming on?
Yeah, for 10 minutes. He would join for 10 minutes. And.
Well, Rob, if you're around, we can send you the link if you want to hop in for 10 minutes.
He's in the live chat. I see him in the live chat.
Rob, let us know.
Should I send him the link?
Yeah, if he wants it. Logan, are we set up for that? Can we be?
I can just throw somebody on. Yeah, it'll work. It'll be fine.
Well, I mean, I have a couple thoughts. First of all, I mean, they obviously didn't announce any net new buying. So they were like,
they let the potential open for it, though.
They changed the name of the Bitcoin that we already hold to a strategic Bitcoin reserve.
Do you think they realize that half of it is Bitfinex's?
That's the second piece. That's the second piece. Isn't over half of it Bitfinex coins?
94,000, I believe.
Oh, I thought it was over 100. Well, anyway.
The original hack was 116,000. They recovered 94,000. Razzle Khan.
So are they gonna give back Bitfinex coins?
I think they should.
And then the second thing is, I mean, I've been pretty consistent on this, but I still hate that they're seeding it with stolen Bitcoin.
Yeah. And explicitly said in the executive order,
we're going to steal more.
Not that we're going to steal more, that any future seized Bitcoin will go into the reserve. So, yeah, it is a perverse incentive.
I guess there's an argument to be said that, I guess, like, whichever agency was seizing the coin previously, they got to keep it. But now.
No, they would go. Somebody would seize it, then it would go to the U.S. Marshals, right?
Yeah, but in civil asset forfeiture, isn't like the agency that seizes it gets the proceeds for their budget or whatever?
Potentially, I don't know.
So it removes that aspect.
Yeah, look, everybody's impressed with your beard. I said, I'm sorry, not a 21,000 zap, but I just have to comment. I said, somebody's commenting on Matt's beard. I said he looks like a young Hugh Jackman and Wolverine with a hat on. A young skinnier.
I'll take that compliment.
Yeah,
Ski just zapped 21,000 sats. Thank you, Ski.
not a perfect executive order, but I'll take it. You know what? I'll take it. It validates Bitcoin. I think the wording around Bitcoin, Salt Dorsey has some problems with it being digital gold, not a peer-to-peer cash system.
Was he talking about himself in the third person in that?
I think so. He's sending the signals, like signing Nostra messages.
It was like Satoshi, Bitcoin is peer-to-peer cash. And then it was like government digital gold.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm taking it as a net win. Where are you? Net win, net loss? Where are you? Neutral? Where are you standing?
I mean, I think it's maybe a slight win, but mostly neutral. I like nothing fundamentally has really changed.
I think the validation.
We don't even know. First of all, like as of last week, nobody knew. nobody knew how much Bitcoin we have.
I don't think
they know how much Bitcoin we have.
That was in the executive order. It's like, first, we got to figure out how much we actually have.
Okay. So that's one piece. There's obviously no net new buying, at least yet, but it does seem like it paves the way for it. The like explicit call out that like coin we seize in the future will also be added to it. It's like, once again, perverse incentive. But I mean, my sources were saying that like as of Monday, they didn't know what they were going to announce, and they were trying to figure out something to announce of substance. So they like kind of scrambled and made this happen. But I mean, clearly the market wasn't, very satisfied with it.
Well, the market. Markets maybe dying. Is it priced in? Probably not. Okay.
No, it's definitely. Yeah. I mean, you got to imagine, like, just from a narrative point of view, that a lot of people are going to start paying attention just because of this.
Yeah.
Right. It's definitely a strong narrative thing.
Agreed. I mean, even Trump, when he was signing the executive order, I think.
His off-camera like
comments. He's like, "Is this a good idea?
Community like this? Yeah." He's like, "Oh yeah, they love it. They're gonna love it. It's the best."
We live in a crazy world.
A clown world, if you will. The Bitcoin Policy Institute with Senator Lummis are throwing an event on Tuesday in DC. So this sets up kind of nicely for that. It's like a nice 1-2.
Yeah, is Sachs gonna be there? Bessent going to be there?
The guest list, I don't believe, is public.
Okay.
But it's a very strong crew that will be there.
I'm going to take it as a win. I think clearly defining that Bitcoin is separate and different than crypto. The crypto summit today was somewhat of a humiliation ritual. I mean, he signed the executive order that basically said, "We're not buying any more of this shit. We'll keep the shit that we've seized, but we're not going to buy any more of it."
What, like the shit coins, you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, and Bitcoin, right?
No, Bitcoin, they said, we can accumulate more of this. And they explicitly said, we're not going to buy any more of this crypto. We're just going to keep the ones that we seize.
Oh, that's a positive. We're seeing like a demarcation there between shitcoins and Bitcoin.
Yeah. It sounds like if they were rushing, it'll be hilarious. So this is truly.
But there might also be just like another executive order that adds ADA and
there could Solana be.
And Ripple to it.
There could be, but.
There I mean, because particularly if they were rushing to get an announcement.
Well, that's what point I was going to make. Like, what if it was just like the last person in their ear before the announcement was a Bitcoin maxi? Like, here's what you need to do.
No. Advice. It's probably, I doubt that's the case. I mean, my guess is it's a way lower lift for them to say, the Bitcoin we currently hold, we're going to call a strategic Bitcoin reserve and we're going to explore future. Like, it's a very low lift thing versus like there could be an executive order next week or whatever in 2 weeks from now that is shitcoin focused.
Yeah, we'll see.
Like, my sources were saying that So, I mean, it's been a long week. Trump had his Truth Social post on Sunday that was saying that we were going to have a strategic crypto reserve or digital asset stockpile with, what did he list? He list XRP, ADA, and Solana. And then immediately following it, like 10 minutes later, he quote posted it. He was like, and also Bitcoin and Ethereum. I love Bitcoin and Ethereum. Supposedly those posts, Eric Trump and Sachs didn't know about, is what I heard. So like first he just shotguns that. And then they have this crypto summit today. And so for the last 5 days, they've been rushing to make sure they had something substantial to announce. And this was like the bare minimum, right?
Yeah. I'll take it. The thought of a president just shooting out Truth Social posts from the toilet and rushing a Bitcoin strategic reserve to market is funny. A funny reality. You have to laugh at it. It is a bit crazy. Going back to what I was saying earlier. Anybody trying to poo-poo this, I can see your point, but let's take the wins when they come. If you would have told us literally a year ago that this was a possibility, nobody would have believed you. The Overton window is completely shifted from squabbling about the right to get a bank account, the right to exist as an industry in the first place, the right to write software without worrying about the state coming after you, which hasn't been solved yet, but... now we're squabbling over what are we putting in the crypto reserve, the Bitcoin reserve, and winning major battles of creating a clear delineation between Bitcoin and the rest of the shit that we all know is fugazi fugazi. May not be perfect. Nothing's perfect. It's a network.
Yeah, I mean, we've made a ton of progress over the last year, and we're trending in the right direction. Like, it's not even... up for debate. I think, people tend to talk in extremes, particularly on social, right? So it's neither like a massive home run win or bad thing, right? It's like somewhere in the middle that's a net win. And I still think the ultimate priority should be like the cool part about Bitcoin is that it empowers individuals, right? That you can save and spend without permission. And that's the real, right? That's like the real strategic reserve is the reserve that every individual is holding. And so from a priority point of view, I think it remains the number one priority is having a regulatory environment and having a government, particularly as an American Bitcoiner, that is very positive and not aggressive against people that are using Bitcoin in a sovereign way, in a freedom-oriented way. But I do think, and a lot of those conversations are happening behind the scenes right now, and it is a very positive environment. And I do think while the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve doesn't specifically enshrine that, I do prescribe to the perspective that it's a top-of-funnel kind of foot in the door for an overall positive environment in the US for Bitcoiners, right? You're giving the government has skin in the game. They have upside, their incentives are aligned. And I think it just makes everything else that much more tangible as a result.
Completely agree. And as it stands today, shout out to me. It's been a while.
Shout out you.
This is the first week I've written a newsletter every day, every weekday of the week in like 6 months. I got off my game there, writing freaks. I hit a bunch of writer's blocks. Needed to take a little break from writing 5 days a week. I'm back at it. But today's newsletter, really building on what you said earlier, like there's extremes both ways. People are like, oh, this is terrible. This is incredible. In the middle, it's a net win. We haven't won yet. Don't get complacent. We need to make sure that the developers, like the Samurai devs, the Tornado Cash devs, people writing open source software are able to do so without worrying about the state coming after them. We need to pass a law. So that's the other thing. This is an executive order. Like, I think legislation needs to make its way through the House, the Senate, and get signed by an executive to actually enshrine these and codify them in a more legitimate way, because who knows what happens 4 years from now. You could have a new administration come in and just completely negate the executive order that was signed earlier this week. So positive momentum. We haven't won yet. A lot of work to do. Make sure the developers are safe, get something enshrined into law. And then on top of that, as an industry, while we have this air cover of the Trump administration, build the tools out aggressively to make it so individuals, companies can use Bitcoin in a self-sovereign fashion.
Yeah, we should be seizing this moment, this little breath of fresh air we have.
Yeah.
In a big way. We have Bitcoin in Space 2, Zap, 21,000 sats. Thank you, sir. Appreciate the support. I guess you won our bet in like the lamest way possible.
Did I win? I thought it had to be a law.
I mean, I think it should be. I think it should be an actual bill, but
well,
if you want to count this as a win, then I can.
Okay, I'll take it. If you're offering a win, I'll take it.
I mean, I'm not fully offering it. I think it's pretty lame.
Yeah, I think you just did. I'll take it.
200K sats. Marty bets Matt that a strategic Bitcoin reserve bill is signed by June 15th.
I told you it was a bill, so I haven't won yet.
You haven't won yet. We also have, you're going to owe me 400,000 sats when they keep Bitfinex's coin.
Right. So what's cumulative? 600,000
sats. That's the other thing, by the way. While everyone is all hyping about this crypto summit and Trump's Truth Social post on, by the way, masterclass that like when people talk about it, they're like, Trump just sent the truth. And they're talking about this SBR. One of the most notable things that happened this week to those paying attention is Paolo of Tether is in DC right now.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the last time he was in the US period.
Well, did you read that Wall Street Journal article?
Yeah.
About Circle and Tether this week?
Yeah, talking about Tether and USDC and Giancarlo of Tether.
Yeah, Giancarlo explicitly said in that, or I don't know if he said it to the reporter or it was hearsay that was reported on rumors, but I think he explicitly said, I don't plan on stepping foot in the United States.
Yeah, but he'll send Paolo. And it seems like they're aggressive. They're seizing the moment themselves and trying to cement their dominance. So that's I think that's something very notable to watch.
I said this on a TFTC episode that hasn't been released, but if you've read that Wall Street Journal article about Circle and Tether, despite any hair that Tether may have on him, what you may think about stablecoins or the way Tether acts, we've been saying it on the show since 2018. Like Tether has been the pirate ship of the industry, and they've really leaned into the cypherpunk ethos in a lot of ways and tried to enable utility for people around the world in a way that I would deem somewhat honorable. And when it comes to picking a fighter in the Circle versus Tether battle, I hope Tether kicks their dick in, because Jeremy Allaire and Circle, they just seem like a bunch of butthurt whiners that are upset that Tether's had the success that it has.
Yeah, I mean, like USDC is like Goldman Belt backed, and they're like pedigree suits over there. So I will say that I do have concerns that these USD tokens are effectively going to become the CBDC without the baggage of a CBDC. We have seen Tether, in their own words, onboard the Secret Service and the IRS and the DOJ for like one click freezing of funds. So Tether is definitely not without its faults. Obviously, it's still a trusted third party too, right?
You've been consistent with that for years.
Lose your money. But it has tons of product market fit. And if anyone's going to run a USD token, you know, they're the least bad by far. They're definitely Bitcoiners. They have a long proof of work. You know, Paolo, me and Paolo probably, like the freaks would agree with Paolo on like 99% of his perspectives. Like he's a diehard Bitcoiner. So I'm cautiously optimistic, and they make a ton of money, and hopefully they don't turn evil. That would be bad. That would suck. But the fact that they're in DC right now and they're aggressive is very interesting. And it's something to keep an eye on.
Logan, I see what you're laughing at. Don't call me fat in the chat, okay? I saw what you're laughing at, Logan. I don't appreciate the chat comment. Thank you. Thank you, Sil. Buff. Buff is the right word. I'm giving up alcohol for Lent, day two. Not that I drink every day. I haven't drank.
That's awesome.
In almost a week. So
proud of you. Hopefully,
maybe the fat will drain out of my face after.
I gave up good mornings for Lent.
Did you really?
Yeah. No more good morning Noster posts. I gave up good mornings and caps.
And caps?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah, and I think going back to the strategic reserve, again, despite what you think about David Sacks, I think from a narrative, from a framing perspective,
fuck David Sacks.
He did a good job, regardless of what you think of him. He did a really good job of framing Bitcoin this week when he highlighted that the Biden administration's sales of Bitcoin over the years would have netted the United States $17 billion if they held on to it. And I think for Trump specifically, that's like a meme or a data point that he looks at is like, wow, we're losing if we're doing that, and really incentivizes that. And then Saifedean tweeted this out earlier today, like it really drives home opportunity costs. So whether the crypto council recognizes it or not, whether Sachs recognizes it, Lutnick recognizes it. And now that Bitcoin has been established as a reserve asset, at some point, they're going to recognize that Bitcoin is the hurdle rate, and they're going to be looking at all this, all these other investments that they're making, or all this other money that they're spending, juxtaposed to buying Bitcoin. How much wealth the country would have if they instead bought Bitcoin instead of sending it to USAID or whatever, and have that hurdle rate injected into their mind moving forward. And so, like that is another part of this that I think is pretty profound, not only here in the United States, but I think the signal that it sends internationally as well is going to force countries into the Bitcoin game. And again, I know many people don't want countries to get into the Bitcoin game, but Bitcoin's an open permissionless network. It is a good money. The market, which is comprised of individuals, businesses, organizations, governments, is going to converge on that money. And so to think that governments aren't going to adopt it is a bit foolhardy. And like I said earlier, while we have this air cover, we need to ensure that Bitcoin doesn't just become this digital gold asset, and that we're building out tools to facilitate peer-to-peer payments and using Bitcoin correctly. I'm not saying you have to go out and spend your Bitcoin, but the ability to spend should get easier for those that want to, like myself.
Stay humble and stack sats, freaks.
Okay. What else do we got? You don't have a list. I'm riding blind here.
I was exhausted and I just got back from that event. So
I'm trying to think of what else happened this week.
I think Rob's about to join us. One thing that happened was craziness in El Salvador with this IMF deal. It appears that the IMF deal requires El Salvador to disclose all of their publicly held Bitcoin and addresses and ownership information and how they're holding it. And it also seems to say that in December that they can't, starting in December, they can't stack any more Bitcoin as part of the deal. Meanwhile, El Salvador has stacked more Bitcoin, and Bukele tweeted out that they're going to keep stacking Bitcoin. So, you know, I don't know exactly what's happening there, but that's also interesting. Kind of an interesting thing to keep an eye on.
Yeah, he tweeted out like by July, by August, by December, something like that, and said, you don't know, or something along the lines of, you don't know what we're actually doing. I don't know.
But it's pretty crazy, right? Because like Stacey and Max, Stacey Herbert and Max Keiser have tried to become like the face of Bitcoin in El Salvador. Like they're like his main Bitcoin advisors. Samson has been heavily involved in El Salvador. And if you saw, did you see like they were like publicly had no idea what the hell was going on? They were like asking Bukele via tweet, like, what's going on here? Like, we read the IMF thing. It says you can't stack Bitcoin. Now you're saying you can stack Bitcoin. Stacey was like, I have no idea what's going on. So it's a little bit of a
clusterfuck, I think, is what you would describe it as.
I mean, I don't think it really matters, except for the fact that it just highlights once again that the IMF is an evil, predatory organization and will hopefully go obsolete soon. But I mean, it clearly does matter if you've decided to move to El Salvador or if you're Salvadoran. But I'm not either of those things, so I don't really have a strong opinion on this.
Neither do I. I wish the Salvadorans that listen to this show well. I hope. The back of my mind, my greatest hope is that Bukele's taking the IMF money, just going to buy a bunch of Bitcoin, not listen to what they're trying to do, and give them the middle finger, give them their money back some way. Is that going to happen? I don't know. But I have no on-the-ground information there. I have no value to add to this conversation beyond what I would like to
add. I mean, if Stacey, Max, and Samson have no idea what's going on, we definitely have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. I do want to know one thing. It's pretty big news. I think another sort of forcing function and shelling point to incentivize the U.S. to really lean into Bitcoin is this race that we're seeing between the states to adopt a Bitcoin strategic reserve. And there was big strides made in Texas this week. Passed the Senate. I think it has to get through one more sort of phase before it's actually signed into law or enacted. So it seems like, from what I'm hearing, it doesn't seem like there's going to be any pushback in this next phase. So Texas may have a strategic reserve at some point soon.
What are the specifics of that? I haven't been following it.
I think they have the ability to buy up to $500 million a year, I believe.
Damn.
Texas strategic reserve.
Got Rob in the green room.
SB.
Bring him in.
Summary relating to establishment and administration of the Texas Strategic Bitcoin Reserve for the purpose of investing in cryptocurrency and the investment authority of the computer and public acts. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
There he is.
There I am.
Hey. Oh,
is my audio good?
You got a good mic too, sir.
I'm a professional podcaster now. That's actually part of, I want to peek behind the curtain. When you become a portfolio company of 1031, you go through a whole podcasting boot camp because they want you to be a good podcaster. So there's a whole, workshop. Like Grant is drill sergeant. They just get in there. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry. We're talking Texas Strategic Bitcoin Reserve here. The 500 number I was talking about is the market cap of the cryptocurrency they're going to add to the reserve must have a $500 billion market cap.
Is there anything besides Bitcoin?
Stable over that? No, just Bitcoin.
They're going to add? They're going to add Tether to their strategic reserve? That doesn't make any sense.
No.
We didn't read the dashboard. Rob, I was just with your co-founder, Becca, at the Bitcoin Ski Summit.
Excellent.
Did you ski?
She crushed it. She crushed it on stage.
She tends to do that. You know, that's actually why I need to get the nicer podcast set up, to remind people that I'm still here.
To compensate.
That's right. It's totally, I'm overcompensating with my large mic stand.
Oh, so did you say over 500 billion, Marty?
Yeah.
So it's basically, that's just the clause that makes it Bitcoin only.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You got to imagine there's a bunch of other countries that are quietly speeding up and trying to stack right now. And it's kind of the same thing happening on the state level and on the corporate level and the individual level.
Yeah, other news this week.
I will say that it's quite bullish how many people think that top is in. That this bull market, this quote unquote bull market, is over.
You think it's over?
Pack it up, boys.
I heavily doubt it. I think we're early stages of this bull market still.
I mean, we talked about this last week. This correction is on par with corrections that have happened in cycles past.
I mean, if you compare it to cycles past, Marty, not only is it not a super cycle, it's a complete shit cycle. It's like the worst cycle ever.
The power trend. We're riding the power trend, dude. It's
slowly okay, diminishing. Rob, the reason we brought you on is because we were talking about...
Wait, let me set this up. No, the reason we brought you on is because Matt made some bold claims about the security trade-offs of Miniscript.
All right.
I mean, Rob already posted that Odell was right.
I did. I can actually pull up that Primal link right, the Primal post right now, for reference. I just had it up. Here we go. I'll actually put it for the freaks in the live stream, on the real live stream. I'll drop in the... There we go. Yeah, so the Bybit stuff, Marty, do you want to tee it up? I'm now dialed in. I've done my tweets talking about I'm live here trying to get viewership over for you guys. Do you want to tee up the conversation?
So we talked about last week, Bybit. The problem that they ran into was that they had to use some custom UI to sign a multi-sig Ethereum transaction because it was too hard to confirm on the screen of the ledger. They got man in the middle attacked by North Korea. Switched to 0 to 1 and had $1.5 billion worth of Ethereum stolen from them. And Matt was saying, let's not shit on Ethereum. This could happen with Bitcoin, particularly with Miniscript. And that's why you're here now.
Excellent. Yeah. So to tee it off, the part, I'm just going to read off this Noster post that I did, and I linked it in the live chat for everyone. In the narrowest premise, Odell is right. Because if you don't understand what you're signing and attesting to, in any Bitcoin transaction, like, you could have a problem, right? Where you don't realize where you're depositing money into. Now, there's many key differences with this. The first off, the way Bitcoin works, right? If you have a single sig, right? You have basically your chain of private keys, your chain of public keys. Those public keys turn into Bitcoin addresses on chain. That's pretty easy for a single device to be able to monitor and understand, because all of the information is just related to that one key. The moment, though, you leave single signature and you go to multi-signature or Miniscript or anything else, there's now more data on the chain that you have to be able to understand, what am I interacting with? So you've probably seen this with a cold card, a Blockstream Jade, a Ledger, any device that you've done to set up, even if you're setting up on just a Bitcoin core node, there's this payload of initial information called the output descriptor. And this output descriptor are kind of the rules of the road for any money you put into this vault. With multisig, it's straightforward because there's three key pieces of information. How many total keys are there? What are the xpubs for those keys? And then how many are required to sign? So a 2 of 3, a 3 of 5, right? You have a bit more information when it comes to Miniscript, because it's no longer just 2 of 3, 3 or 5. Maybe you have some time locks. Maybe you have multiple OR conditions, right? Like different ways that you can spend the money. Maybe you have an AND condition, right? And the way that works at AnchorWatch, right, is it's a customer 2 of 3 at the start plus an AnchorWatch 2 of 3. And then over time, 6 months in, it becomes a 1 of 3 from the customer and a 2 of 3 from AnchorWatch. And then there's a window at month 11 of the policy, specifically where, in the event the customer lost all of their keys, an Anchor Watch key set of 2 of 3 signs, plus a key from Coin Corner, right, based out of the Isle of Man. Bitcoin only exchange, been in business for 10 years. I'm sure many of the freaks know who they are. Can come together to reconstitute the funds to give back to the customer. But then finally, after the insurance policy expired, you're fine. Whatever we cease to exist, what have you. All of your disaster contingencies, it goes back to just your 2 of 3. So that's a lot of words to explain the many different ways you can spend from this vault, right? And it all, you have to verify it on screen. And so what I just did is I loaded up on a Cold Card queue, a test wallet, to show you what it looks like. It's center my screen here. So you have, it says, maybe not quite in focus, RHR test. And you can start seeing a bunch of numbers and letters, right? And it continues down here. And then what you can do if you wanted to, as a power user, this is what I would do. You can actually hit the number 1 and you can actually look at the individual XPubs. And the starting, I lay out that context to say, this is where you need to understand how the vault is being set up. Now, I would say most people aren't verifying XPubs when they're setting up a multisig quorum, right? They're just like, oh, cool, this is my wallet config file, good to go. And you may be, your cold card will authenticate my cold card as part of this vault, but it won't actually understand the data that exists outside of it, right? So for the freaks at home doing multisig, a good health hygiene exercise is making sure you have your vault set up. Verify that the XPub that's like in your Sparrow wallet and you're like looking at the quorum is the XPub that's actually on each of your devices, right? And that just works with multisig. The second you leave single sig land, you need to understand what your vault is doing. The next part I would call out here is that this is a one-time operation you do. The difference between Bitcoin and ETH is that the nature of the contract, when they're signing it on that ledger, they're just committing to a state update of a contract. Whereas in Bitcoin, all of the state change exists in the Bitcoin transaction itself. This is a really important distinction between Bitcoin and Ethereum and how they operate. You have a contract on ETH that points to a multisig and you're able to do whatever you need to do. In Bitcoin, the state change is I'm sending Bitcoin from this UTXO to this UTXO. It's entirely contained in there. And so what Cold Card Ledger, all of the other hardware wallets do when you're doing a multisig or you're using Miniscript is it does an initial handshake and says, hey, are you setting up the vault this way? Are you good with that? And then if you accept it, the cold card, since it has memory, it'll actually will retain that information. Or what you do for the ledger, since it's stateless, like when you plug it in, there's no state. It's a clean slate besides the master secret. You pass in like a signature that you previously authenticated this, right? And so all of this is to say is that there is a window for this. I think the easiest way to mitigate this is just do a test transaction. Like throw 10,000 sats in there, do a test transaction, make sure it works, verify everything. And then you'll know forever in the future that you've already verified this vault and the rules and how it can be spent. The other thing I would say too is the bigger screen helps out a lot. And then once you do the authentication, you do this initial handshake of how this is, I want to spend the money. Whenever you go to spend in the future, it just says, hey, we're spending from your test, whatever the name, this is called RHR test. It'd be like, hey, you're spending from RHR test, this amount of Bitcoin to these addresses, do you confirm or not, right? So the maintenance state, because UTXOs are much simpler than an Ethereum smart contract, is way more constrained to be able to say, once you do this one-time approval, it looks like a regular multisig transaction every other time you go to transact after that. And that's kind of like a high level overview. I don't want to take over the entire show, but I'm happy to answer questions or kind of dig into it a little bit more too with you guys.
That was great.
And to attempt to reiterate for the layman, comparing a setup in Bitcoin versus Ethereum. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin, everything's predetermined. Like you said, you can do a test transaction to make sure it's operating in the way that you expect it to get comfortable to put more money in it. Ethereum, it's not predetermined, and the state change function can be changed when you're going to make the ultimate transaction. Whereas Bitcoin, with Miniscript and multisig, it's sort of predetermined.
That's right. Yeah. And you actually, you can look at how some people manage this too. If you know, like River, right? They reuse addresses specifically around for this reason, where they just know the address is there, it's sitting there, and they can use it forever. And that's why, you know, if you look on chain, when River does a proof of reserve attestation, it's a 3 of 5 multisig. Now there's trade-offs in privacy when you reuse addresses, but I will say, once you like put money in, you take money out, and you see that that address does this thing, you're not gonna have to worry about state changing ever. That's entirely different with Ethereum, where in this contract, they were basically able to like change ownership of the contract itself, right? They were committing to an update that they didn't understand.
To be clear here, Marty's prompt was a little bit off from my critique. My critique wasn't that this is the same situation as Bybit. It's a completely different situation. But my point is that we have situations in Bitcoin where people are approving gobbledygook on their screen and aren't really actually verifying anything.
Yeah, and what I would push back on and say is that most people, when they're setting up their multisigs, aren't actually checking the XPubs that they're belonging to. Right. Well, so I think it's actually a good effort to be able to kind of compare people's own security practices and making sure that they're not taking anything for assumption or for granted.
Well, yeah. When you interact,
go ahead, Marty.
Well, I was going to say,
when you're setting up a multisig, mm-hmm. The cold card is pretty clear on what XPubs are part of that multisig, and as you're going through that verification process.
Yeah,
and it's like it also checks when you're doing transactions. It checks the change address for you to make sure it belongs to it. It knows all about the other devices. That's why it needs that wallet config file on it. And you probably are right that most aren't actually verifying it, but it's relatively easy to verify. Mm-hmm. What does it show when you set up a mini script for the first time? What does that look like?
That's what I have right here. So
is it very? Because to be clear, the last time I set up a miniscript was Liana with a ledger. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter if I wanted to verify that. It was just scrolling bullshit. And I just pressed OK.
Yeah. I should just take a picture of my
fundamentally cold different.
Card and post it. No, because that's what I was showing on screen. When I set up a miniscript wallet right now, right? On the queue, right? The bigger screen helps out a lot compared to the
ledger. Take a picture, post it. We'll have Logan show it.
I'll do that right now while I'm talking to you.
Another point here too, comparing this to the Bybit attack, if you're thinking of the attack surface and incentive of the attack, somebody would have to man in the middle you during the setup of the multisig and the miniscript, at which point they don't know how much Bitcoin is ultimately going to be in the wallet. Whereas with Bybit, there was an address with a ton of Ethereum in it, their cold wallet, and that was a bounty and an incentive to go attack that wallet.
Absolutely. Well, no, but,
I mean, you could have a situation, the more likely attack in this type of situation would be completely different than a Bybit attack.
They would try to switch the destination address when you go to sign.
No, it would be on setup. On setup, you would do some kind of miniscript thing where you had spending rights to the person's wallet at will at some point in the future or something like that, right?
Yeah.
In theory, right? So if you were trying to war game out how this attack works,
you'd have a malicious app that would just create a wallet that you thought you had unilateral control over that you didn't actually have unilateral control over.
Yeah, either by switching out the XPubs, right, or by changing the actual spending rules of the contract. Either way, you could have it, because you could have it be like, I have a backup key that's a single sig, right? And then that single sig backup key maybe is the attacker's XPub. In that case, they can take the funds.
Exactly.
It would be at the setup. So this is also part of why when you sign up for AnchorWatch, we do a test transaction. You have attested to the wallet configuration itself. We've attested to the wallet configuration. We're able to go through a whole process and triple verify everything before the actual vault is formally live. I think there's ways of streamlining this in the future. I've done some documentation. There's a repo called miniscript templates, which I'll throw into the freaks in the chat too. I think a longer arc of what would be really interesting is being able to have hardware wallets have pre-configured templates, and they can say, hey, this is the AnchorWatch template, or hey, this is a 2 of 3 becoming a 1 of 3 template. And then you can abstract the miniscript text policy, and then you're back to just verifying XPubs again, like you would be for a multisig, right? I think that's a good longer term goal of being able to think about how to streamline this. The beauty of miniscript is that it could be any of these larger complicated arrangements for how you want to be able to set up and secure your funds or whatever financial application or use case you're using. It's just earlier days. So the way you can start with this is by presenting the full information and being able to sign off on it. But it would be at the setup is when it's most susceptible. But that's also when I personally put the most scrutiny on the setup, right? I think it's a well received point though, in understanding
from the AnchorWatch team. Like the AnchorWatch team is verifying this for the customer as well.
That's right.
And yeah, and your insurance, theoretically, if something happened during this process, the insurance would cover it, right?
Yeah. So part of our attestation process is kind of tying in, because your output descriptor is part of the insurance policy itself. So it's reconciling internally, being like, okay, this is the vault that we're securing. It is spending and following the rules that we're adhered to. And then that gets put on the policy page itself. So it's all holistically tied in together.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this a lot in the past, in terms of like an attacker, they're going to go after low hanging fruit first, like phishing attacks, calling your grandma to sweep it to the exchange.
Just send you an email and ask you to reply with your seed phrase.
Yeah. And I mean, this is certainly an attack surface, but I think the risk that an attacker would take by trying to man in the middle of the setup, and not to say it will never happen and people won't try it, but I think they're much lower hanging fruit. And if you're doing it in a collaborative custody fashion, like you are with AnchorWatch, with the verification of the test transaction, it mitigates a lot of that risk.
The other big one that is like the number one thing that I think is really important to verify on screen on device, or maybe not the number one thing, but in practice, is your deposit addresses. When you're sending to cold storage, you want to make sure you're actually sending to the correct address and the app isn't lying to you.
Absolutely.
Which is very easy to do on Bitcoin. But what amazes me is it's impossible to do that on an exchange. And we've never really seen any attacks at scale of like Coinbase deposit addresses getting swapped out maliciously, man in the middle, which is, or like Kraken addresses or whatever, which is just interesting to me.
Well, it's typically like a phishing attack where they make it look like Coinbase, right?
Usually it's not even like a deposit address, but yeah.
No, the deposit address. So like on our side, I won't get into the inner mechanics just for the sake of not showing too much. We run multiple redundancy checks before we display a deposit address on screen. Additionally, you're able to, with your hardware wallet, because you've already done this handshake with the hardware wallet to explain how can I actually... the rules of the vault, you can actually, with your hardware wallet, verify that the address that I'm presenting to you is the one that's intended, that you already agreed to, right? I think that's like an important step guard and safety measure in being able to kind of do these kind of mitigations. It's interesting that an exchange hasn't gone that far yet. I'm posting it right now because it's on my phone. I posted on Nostr. Now I'm replying. Right. I'm replying with the images. No, I'm doing it right now.
Peace Hoddle 2, Zap 21,000 sats. Thank you, Peace Hoddle. Appreciate it.
And
yeah, it's early days. I mean, you guys are clearly thinking about it the right way.
So I just posted it on Nostr. So you can see the two images for how it looks and works. It breaks it across two screens. I think that may be some feedback for the CoinKite team to be able to like line by line scroll instead of entire screen chunk it. But this is like, that's like the information. And it's fundamentally the XPubs with the Miniscript rules that are after it. This goes back to my point.
What the fuck are you verifying there?
So what you could verify.
Can you walk us through what it's saying?
I'll walk you through it. So looking at the first image, let's go to the first one. I posted them out of order. So that first one is saying, hey, this is the RHR test wallet, right? You're doing native PIT, pay to witness script. And now this is where the Miniscript logic begins, and or, meaning there's multiple ways you can verify it. Multi means multi-signature, two required keys, at zero, at one, at two. That's the syntax for the XPubs, which you can actually independently verify later. These are the AnchorWatch keys. So remember I said, it's AnchorWatch keys plus, and then there's two possible conditions with the OR. It is AND V3, which is the coin corner recovery key after an epoch timestamp that's further out into the future, right? So that's an actual calendar date time, because we're using calendar date time locks. That's the first OR condition. So it's AnchorWatch 2 of 3, and either the coin corner after a certain recovery time lock, or a 2 of 3 of the customer. And Logan, if you can go to the next screen now, it ends there with the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 are the customer keys. And then there's another condition, which is the time lock, because actually how you execute of 2 of 3 becoming a 1 of 3 is you have basically a 2 of 4, and one of those conditions is the time lock itself, right? That's how you satisfy the threshold condition. And then on the next piece, the other way is an and condition of, this is the sovereign recovery path of the customer, where you're saying that you're able to spend with the customer key set after the furthest out timestamp after the insurance policy expires. So all of this is, I put in the chat for the freaks. I'll even reply on Nostr 2 with the descriptor templates. You could cross verify the descriptor templates specifically with the publicly documented stuff on the Blockstream repo. What I've also done for many customers is I help them load it onto Bitcoin Core directly too, after they set up their initial wallet, before they deposit funds, so they can actually see on their own node all of the rules and kind of seeing the deposit addresses on their own software stack as well.
Awesome. Thank you for walking us through that.
Happily. Yeah, I'm just scrambling, being a one-man producer over here, replying with all the links so people can follow along.
You're doing great, dude.
I'm not done with you yet either, Rob. I'm not done with you yet.
All right. You have my full attention.
I saw you were talking past Matt Corallo earlier today. What's going on with OpsCTV and CheckSig for Hash? There's a lot of fervor around it these days.
Is there?
There a lot of talks about vaults. Are we getting vaults?
I don't think immediately we're getting vaults, right? It is something that is... I guess to take a step back, right, is that I've designed everything that I've done with AnchorWatch today, and I think there's still a lot of design space left in kind of pushing the boundaries of what Bitcoin Script can do without a change, right? So that's using Miniscript, that's kind of building new innovative financial products like offering one-to-one insurance. I think there's a lot of territory to kind of carve out there. But Bitcoin is a long-arcing project, and in that case, people are kind of long dated out to be able to think about what changes could happen in the future. So Gloria did a tweet basically asking end users, like, what are the kind of applications and things that you're looking for that you'd want to have upgrade changes for? And with that, there was a conversation around vaulting. I'd have to go look at the original context of the thread. But I was talking about, hey, like, I've built something that I think is a pretty robust security solution. I would like the idea of having vaults with reactive security, because it could offer a better product to end customers. And the dynamic, to be honest, though, is that it also greatly democratizes the ability for users to have better self-custody, right? And the fact that I would be able to, as a business, offer better services, anyone, if the like something like an Op Vault were to activate, any freak can just run up their own node in their own stack in their basement and have orders of magnitude better security than what any exchange can offer today. Right. And so what I'm somewhat mindful of is just for the health of the network, being able to just increase the ability to do security. So something like an Op Vault focusing on just core layer one security, what you're able to do is you're able to have reactive windows, right? Because the way Bitcoin works is once the money has left your transaction, like it's gone, there are no refunds. Whereas Op Vault would be able to let you have somewhat of a staging area where you're committing to, hey, after this time lock, I'm going to go spend it somewhere else. And I can like basically put a hash on like where I plan on spending it, or someone can step in and sweep the funds out in a recovery method. I would say the steel man, the perspective that Matt was talking about was you fundamentally are back to a key management problem, and you now have a second set of keys, which are like your deep, deep cold storage keys that have to be kept safe. And that if you're already compromised, you probably have a higher correlative chance of having those keys also be compromised. So you haven't actually been able to on net add better security, but you've added a lot more complication and kind of being able to withdraw and do stuff. My response was that I think ultimately this vision and the way I think about it, not just with like AnchorWatch on the technology side with Miniscript, actually it is, it's all related. It's risk distribution technology at the end of the day, right? The idea of distributing keys, that's why we go from single sig to multi-sig, because all of your keys are not a single point of failure. And what we're able to do with Miniscript is we're able to actually effectively act as a co-signing service. AnchorWatch can never unilaterally move the funds at any point ever, right? The only time you can ever unilaterally move funds is with you as the end user after the insurance contract has expired. So we're kind of like already like in the spectrum of self-custody, collaborative custody, like we're already kind of like altering it. We call it negative control. And from there, I would love to be able to do things like if someone's trying to spend money from the vault, it has to sit on chain for a day or two, maybe a week, just to make sure like, hey, this is what you agreed to, right? Like this is what's happening. Like it gives you like a cool off period before the funds fully release. And what you can do to distribute that risk is have other institutions, right? I hypothesized as a use case is that you could have insurance carriers who are actually underwriting the safety of the vault that are economically in line to make sure stuff doesn't go bad, to be able to step in as that emergency uncorrelated secondary set of recovery keys, right? That's not something that's obviously live today, but when I'm thinking about the design space of the future of Bitcoin and custodial relationships, one, I think insurance carriers are just better fit to be fitting in that role. Just like you don't go to a bank that doesn't have any reserves. Coinbase has $400 billion of like customer crypto custody. They don't have $400 billion of excess wealth sitting on their balance sheet for them to be able to backstop if something goes wrong, right? So this is what I think about just in the grander scope and design space, that things like an op vault, and with this also is paired with CTV, to be able to add more programmability to the base layer of Bitcoin can offer better security guarantees to the end user, which are way better, right? Because your orders of magnitude is you have less than one block to undo a screw up. If someone tried stealing from you, you have to like RBF it back or something. This you would actually have hundreds, if not 1,000 or 2,000 blocks, right? Maybe a week or two to be able to actually recover those funds. And I just think that's objectively better, and servicing of the use case of Bitcoin as a store of value, like as a digital gold, that there's better ways that we can help secure this thing. And that offers better governance checks on businesses to be able to say, oh, you're withdrawing my money. I'm looking at it on chain. It's sitting in the staging address. I can, you know, use software or what have you to like verify it's going to where I'm saying it's going to go. And it provides a really clean chain of custody as it leaves the custodial relationship or the joint custodial relationship or even your own self-sovereign one, right? Like all of these things I just think are strictly better. And I'm going to keep on building my business as if these things aren't going to turn on. But in the ideal space, if like one of the lead maintainers of Bitcoin's like, what do you want as an end user? It's like, well, I've built a business. We're now launched in live. We have customers that are looking for better security features. We're able to offer what we can today with Bitcoin Consensus. I just want to like throw my hat in the ring and say there are other really cool primitives that if they were to be unlocked, we'd be able to offer even better services to end customers.
How would you, that's all fine and dandy. How would you activate this change?
Oh, activation?
Yeah.
I think as far as I know, no one's doing activation, right? I'm just talking about like, I want these features.
He doesn't want to answer.
In an ideal world, how would you, if you were the supreme leader and you were going to handle activation, how would you do it?
User activated soft fork, lot equal true, something that's like a year, 2 years out to give plenty of time to be able to go
for
it.
Is that BIP9 again?
BIP8. BIP9 is a minor, right? Yeah.
BIP9, yeah, BIP8.
So. BIP8. Yeah, that's how I'd want to do it, right? You have years out in the future. It's a soft fork, meaning that if you don't want to run it, like you're by default not going to have to do anything against it, right? It's just new functionality being added. And in the conversations, around this, I find it interesting that a lot of the initial pushback was like, well, you can do versions of this today without an upgrade. And honestly, you could do many things without, you could do Lightning without upgrades. You just bring a third party in, you have a 2 of 3, and then you have an intermediary that's updating channel states. That doesn't mean it's a better solution, right? You ultimately can always do something today by having a co-signing service or deleting keys and emulating covenants. But the actual powerful use case is having it automatically settled on chain. And then there's like a long laundry list of other things like transaction introspection, 64-bit math, so you can actually do programmatic spending rules based on how much Bitcoin you're using. Those are like many hops down the road. I'm just focused on like what I think is like the easiest step forward to be able to open up the design space.
So is this push towards check template verify and check sig from hash what you would be in favor of, or is that
combination? Yeah, for me, so CTV would be able to provide some initial vault like capabilities. It wouldn't be the full recursive like looping back like with an op vault and the clean UX. You'd be able to, though, with CTV, do some of these output restrictions and kind of like mock these different stages. I think that'd be a good place. Checksig from stack for the freaks at home, because CTV has been probably discussed a lot over the years. Checksig from stack is just, you know, being able to check a signature to in your assigning of a message rather than the specific transaction you're working with. In that sense, I know like floppy disk dev was doing like a polling. No one really has an objection to what checksig from stack can do on its own, right? There's other interesting use cases with checksig from stack plus CTV that allow you to do like L2, like a lightning symmetry, emulate like full on lightning symmetry. it's definitely outside my area of expertise, and to be honest, care. I'm more focused on core layer one store value uses cases of Bitcoin. You can do like key delegation with checksig from Stack. Like you can have other contingencies and things. It'd probably clean up some stuff with DLCs and oracles because you'd be able to sign the messages, right? I think those are reasonable steps forward. The CTV code's been around for 5 years with no bug that's been found. There's a multiple Bitcoin bug bounty on it, I believe. Checksig from Stack is pretty benign. It's been in Liquid for a while. Bitcoin Cash added it forever ago. There's a couple different like small tweaks around the implementation details of it, but like that code is pretty narrowly scoped, right? And I think in the context of upgrades in Bitcoin, the last two were massive upgrades that didn't explicitly add big functionality like an opcode in the same way you would think of like time locks. Right. The last time we got like an opcode upgrade were the two time lock opcodes that we got back in 2014, 2015. And those are like 200 lines of code. And same with like CTVs, like 150 lines of code versus like, you know, Taproot and SegWit, which are just entire architectures of like everything that's being worked on. Right. So I think that's also in the context of the last two forks that we've gotten have been really big changes in functionality at like the protocol level. These are more narrowly scoped in this specific opcode. And to Steelman the other side, it would be that these narrow use cases are able to do things that we don't know and intend to understand how they execute yet. You can't prove a negative. What I would say is that all of the people who have done research and looking into this so far haven't found any sort of like larger unlock of other use cases. So I think in that sense, people that are discussing and evaluating this stuff are pretty well scoped.
Yeah, just following the conversation on Twitter this week, it seems like a lot of people, I saw Nick Newman from Casa spoke up, obviously James O'Byrne was speaking up about this, other yourself saying they could add functionality and better security and usability for your users. It seems like people that are running exchanges are bullish, or not bullish, bullish is the wrong word, would welcome better vaulting potential.
Yeah, like as someone who's built out like the infrastructure of building out our own wallet and being able to offer this service to customers, it would be just a step mark, an obvious step mark of better functionality, right? Being able to know that even if a fund were for whatever list of reasons had left a vault, that you could have this staging area to be able to have reactive security. I think it's a massive win. I'm just mindful of the fact that in the earlier conversation with Matt, there was some conversations around that, you know, the exchanges and people he's talking to aren't interested in this. And I would just want to point out that it's obvious that incumbents who have a massive head start are very well capitalized, are not going to want to disrupt the boat to allow anyone else to be able to come in and be able to execute on what they do with a much smaller staff and more efficiency by you're essentially able to delegate physical human operations to on-chain opcodes and bytes. And that's any incumbent isn't going to want to be able to flip the table. Because when you add an opcode, you're essentially democratizing for the entire protocol and network to have added functionality that previously was gated behind human access controls and processes, right? So you're able to effectively, remove a head start advantage. And that's what James quote tweeted me, making a comment along the lines of, it's a more principled take for layer one security because it actually is in my interest to not make security easier so you buy my product, right? Actually, just economically, that it actually would make a lot more sense for me to be like, oh, everything's fine. Don't worry about it. And so like, I just think I just view it as a steward of, a user of Bitcoin who's been in Bitcoin for 10 years. What I would love to be able to have for myself personally and my business, I view our edge at AnchorWatch would be, we would be faster to execute and be on the leading edge of offering better services by leading on what's possible on chain. And that's what we're doing already with Trident Vault. So I would say like, if anything else were to be in the process of getting turned on, we'd be able to hit the ground running, right? So I view my edge as meeting the curve to where it is and being able to better serve customers than rather than trying to put things on ice so I can build an incumbent advantage and people can't as easily follow.
Yeah. I will say, as an objective observer of all this Covenant soft fork talk over the last few years, I think the emergence of the conversation this week particularly has been the most productive that I've seen over the last couple of years. And that's just my observation.
I appreciate it. Yeah, no, I've enjoyed following the conversation. I think it's been interesting. I enjoyed explaining everything out to Matt. We were just trying to get to the bottom of what I had in mind and vision. And it was great, you know, right? Being able to talk about a use case that isn't possible today and being able to fully kind of like tease out what that would look like. Just having dialogues and conversations, ultimately Bitcoin is people, right? It's a human space. So everyone has to be able to understand. Twitter is rough, X, and I would even say Nostr, just low bandwidth like text form with an audience sometimes just makes it a lot harder to be able to just like directly communicate more complicated ideas. You have to kind of chunk things out into smaller bites. That's why also third spaces are great, right? Being able to kind of have more time in person. That's why I love working out of Bitcoin Park, right? Being able to see people in person, have those higher bandwidth conversations are great.
What's the BDK team saying about this? I'm sorry, Matt. I've been hogging it.
Yeah, what is the BDK team saying about this?
The BDK team about like the opcodes and stuff?
Covenant. I don't know. Are they like, talking about?
About any of this stuff? I haven't talked to Steve recently about it. You know, it's interesting in that Bitcoin dev kit built on top of Rust Bitcoin and built on top of Rust Miniscript, you'd be able to, with those core underlying tools, add in functionality for these different things and roll them up. Jeremy Rubin made CPO Miniscript, which is basically Miniscript plus CTV, right? You'd be able to kind of start extending these design parameters. It would take time to review and get integrated if we were on any sort of like live activation path. But those are things that could get easily integrated with the existing like developer tool chains. And I would say Bitcoin Dev Kit is such a great abstraction for all of the complexities under the hood that you'd be able to, with time, be able to turn things on. And I think that's honestly, as part of the conversation around this stuff, dev tooling is a really under-evaluated part of all of this, right? So having BDK is really a superpower. And I would just like, I think thinking about ways to change things and improving the dev tooling. So developers and application devs can build the end consumer products people are looking for are great. Like, I think that's also like why Liana Wallet, like are built on top of, they use some BDK, but they're using Rust Bitcoin, Rust Miniscript. You got Ben over at the Bitcoin Keeper that's now leveraging this stuff. I think now the tools are becoming accessible enough to everyone where this is kind of an upgraded standard of how, you know, holding your layer one Bitcoin and keeping it safe can evolve.
Rob, what odds would you give any soft fork activating by the end of the year?
End of this year, March? I would put it somewhere in the ballpark of 10%. I think next year maybe more optimistic. Like I said, I would want like a longer time to be able to like agree that this is what's
next
being turned
year,
on.
What percentage would you put it at?
Right now? I'd go 25%. Let's see what happens over the next
Do you want to bet on it?
what lay me 4-1 odds?
Yeah.
Because if I'm saying 20, right? 25, what you want to put my 25,000 sats to your 100,000 sats.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Done.
What's the term? Like, what is
within the calendar year of 2026?
Within the calendar year 2026, that it is actually activated. Like, it has to be live, right? Not like, oh, the activation. Yeah.
It has to be live on the actual.
Yeah.
Most work chain.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, live on the most work chain and not just like the activation code is sitting there. It has to actually be activated, right? Because there's kind of a staggered step of like, it's in the code base, but it doesn't activate for X blocks, right? Like it, not that, like literally has to be, it has to get past that and actually be activated. Yeah.
Perfect deal. By the way, I see a comment from, first of all, thank you for walking us through all of that. Nostr egg zapped us 21,000 sats, but I see a comment from Bitcoin Space 2, to be clear here, at 1031, we do not invest in businesses that require soft forks. No. I think that's just bad.
It's prudent
financial stewardship.
It's prudent risk management.
Investor money, and also it doesn't. It just keeps incentives aligned with the network really well.
Yeah,
because we've seen in the past VCs that, you know, have poured a ton of money into shit that requires a change and then trying to push through changes. In general, me personally, I'm very conservative about changes. I think we should be very slow and deliberate. And I think Rob is being very clear here that, you know, their business works today and it actually works quite well. And there's a lot of demand for it without any kind of change. So
exactly. Yeah. Like the entire premise of everything, I've built is assuming Bitcoin will not upgrade again. Because it not only you as an investor, but me, I have investors besides you in my own kind of deployment of time, right? My most scarce resource. It's working on something that works within the design constraint of Bitcoin today. That's, and I think I've been able to at least prove that I'm pushing the boundaries of what can be done within the design confines of what Bitcoin can do today. Because although I'm now a retired Miniscript influencer, my co-founder Becca has taken that mantle.
I don't know how retired you are. You've did the full show today.
Well, I get pulled in, right? I just get pulled in. Like Becca's going to analyze the tape and be doing it better than me in about 2 weeks.
This was supposed to be a tight hour rip. And then you joined. Before we wrap, do you have any topics that you'd like us to discuss before we wrap, since you are a ride or die freak? I will say to the freaks, you know, Rob specifically is a really cool example here, because we've been friends for quite a long time. He was a ride or die freak from the very beginning, listening to the show. We launched 1031. He launched Anchor Watch. And then we partnered, which is just really fucking cool. In like the course of 7 years or 6 years, it's fucking insane that it happened. So,
yeah, no, it's been a hell of a ride and a journey. No, it's definitely really cool. And I would just say, as a note out there for people, you can just build things, just start doing things. Yeah. It takes a lot of time, and I'm not going to say it's easy, but you know, if you want to go do something, like, you know, put a lot of thought into it. And I an open line entrepreneurs hit me up all the time about their thoughts and ideas, and like, I'm an open book, so you can always hit me up either
on Twitter. What's your opinion on the strategic Bitcoin reserve?
I think it's got appropriately priced in of they weren't going to sell the coins. I'm kind of neutral in the sense that you need an act of Congress to actually have it really have any staying power. The next administration can just undo it all. This is where I was joking about you could just time lock it. And if you need someone to time lock the Bitcoin, let me know. I also think the U.S. government should be holding this stuff directly. I think it's wild that they would, you know, subcontract it out to a custodian when it's the people's Bitcoin. You know, publicly traded companies have no business monetizing off, you know, the American stockpile of Bitcoin. It should be held within the U.S. government's infrastructure. And I'd also more than happy to help secure that and be able to lend my time.
Which is laid out, I mean, to your point, I think we said that earlier before you hopped on, about the executive order has no staying power. The bill, and I think in Senator Lummis's bill, that is laid out. Like, there should be a multi-sig vault controlled by the government that the stockpiles held in.
I think it makes sense. I've talked about this a couple times, that you could even do each house of Congress could hold a multi-sig, and the president holds a multi-sig, and the Supreme Court holds a multi-sig.
Can we trust these people with keys? I think we need to have delegated.
I'm fine with that. Get NatSec people that are in there. You could have a lower security co-signing to make it all work. I guess, yeah, no, like, I think it's...
Would you, like, want the deep state to hold the keys?
I mean, they're probably the only people competent enough to do it, you know?
Like, who in the national security apparatus are we entrusting to hold the keys?
We pardon Snowden, we bring him back, and he holds, I don't know.
No, I think ultimately, I think in the sake of crawl, walk, run, you would start with keys being held internally. Like, you need to just have that held there. Like, it doesn't make sense not to. You can have Coinbase co-sign it, right? If you want to use that as like a party to like co-sign a transaction, go for it. But the idea that it's all being held by some other third party just doesn't make sense to me. We don't do that with Fort Knox and allegedly the gold that's there, right? We hold it ourselves.
Allegedly.
I snuck that in there, allegedly. Yeah. I want to have the UTXO set. Like, these are the government's Bitcoin. That's the people's Bitcoin, right? You want to be able to look at it on chain and be like, yep, that's the government.
Yeah,
like,
it should be full Bitcoin. Proof of reserves, like, absolutely. Constant monitoring.
Yeah. And I have Shinobi sending me a note directly saying that it's all of our civic duties to commit crimes so that we can get our Bitcoin seized so it gets added to the Bitcoin reserve. That's
true. you can just donate it if you want.
That's right. You could just donate it. Right. Because once they post it on chain, you can just donate your Bitcoin to the strategic reserve. Just like when people were sending Bitcoin to the Bybit coins, not Bybit, Bitwise. They were sending all the Bitwise ETF coins.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the time, guys. I didn't mean to take over the show. I was working.
You can tell we're actually a little sluggish today. We're a little sluggish.
You should join us more often. Very grateful to have you working on Bitcoin and giving us some insight.
Thank you.
Marty, you want to read the one shout out we got last week?
Yes, it's from Sill. We pulled up. I was looking at it earlier today. Ba-ba-ba-ba.
Soap Miner zapped us 21,000 sats. Thank you, Soap Miner.
We only have one boost to read from Rabbit Hole Recap 346. Stay humble, stack sats. Pringle Mac, 22,000 sats. There is only one D in Odell. 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 Noted. Love you, Freak Sill.
Appreciate you. There's no hard feelings.
You had to put the hat on.
I had to put the hat on.
Are we PodConf approved? Is only TFTC?
It's split.
I am Marty, not PodConf approved, but Marty is.
Odell is not PodConf approved.
And so is Rob. Marty. I will say the Bugle's fucking crushing it lately. I'm very grateful to have them in this space.
I was talking to Richard Greaser. There could be some stuff on the horizon, you know?
I think that's some interesting opportunities. The Bugle's... Odell, you haven't been on the Bugle podcast yet.
Do they actually have people on? Or is it just all AI?
Party Marty was on at one point. That was
the first live guest was Party Marty Ben.
Oh, but it's like an AI version of Marty. Was that what it was?
No. You have to enter the Bugleverse. You had to open up.
Yeah, dude,
eyes.
Come on. How is TFTC PodConf approved? This dude doesn't even know whether or not.
That's why Odell's on the fence. He's not quite. You know, he hasn't hit the PodConf approval status.
TFTC's PodConf approved because under every single one of your TFTC tweets, it's like, join the Fold Reflink program, join the Big Key Reflink program. That's why your PodConf approved.
Hey, it has good nothing products. To do with following good products. The go join the Reflink programs. Brought to you by PodConf.
By the way, I get to spend. I got to spend a bunch of time with the Big Key and Proto Mining teams. So it was pretty great. Those guys are awesome.
Pretty nice. Wait, did you guys talk about Presidio Bitcoin? There's a new Bitcoin third space.
I heard it's sweet though.
Third space is not a good term. No one knows what a third space is. You have to explain it.
It's a shelling point already. People understand it.
No one understands it unless you explain it to them. Once you explain it to them, they're like, oh, it makes sense. But it's just not a good term.
Presidio Bitcoin, from what I hear, is awesome.
They have a podcast now, too. Steve Lee.
No, it's the same podcast.
But they rebranded. It's now the Presidio Bitcoin podcast. They did a pre-podcast. Yeah, they just did a live stream today with Steve Lee, Max from
HiveMind.
HiveMind VC, and
who's the David.
David King, right?
David King, yeah.
Great. It's RHR competition is out there. You know, we started a show 6 years ago. And
love to see it.
I messaged Rod today, Matt, because Bitcoin Park's been around for years and there's not a Bitcoin Park.
I know, you did it in my group chat. I know. Was in the group chat.
I'm airing the group chat out publicly. I'm a bit disappointed there's not a Bitcoin Park podcast. You got to get Rod working on that. He's not doing enough.
I thought I saw one.
We have RHR and Still Dispatch, and then we have Bitcoin Brainstorm with ARK. We do a lot of podcasts.
That's right. You got a lot out there, but you don't have the official brand.
This is fake news.
Are there too many podcasts?
There's way too many podcasts. We should just end the podcast.
No. We were here. We've been here for 6 years. We're not ending it.
There's way too many podcasts. But I'm happy that. I mean, I think Steve, Max, and David are great. So it's good to see them contribute on the podcast run.
Absolutely.
And Presidio in general, I heard really good things about it. Maybe it can help turn San Francisco around.
Hopefully.
I mean, the mind share there. I mean, the opening party, GMAX came out. Dorsey was there.
Gary Richard was there.
Wentz was there.
Yeah, I mean, it was an all-star crew.
Yeah.
But to Carl, end, like,
Carl Dong's working out of there. That's where he was recording from when we recorded the other week.
But most of them flew in, right? Like, they don't live in SF anymore.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I'm not going to dox anybody. And I don't know where they live anyway, so.
Carl Don has that new Obscura VPN, which is looking pretty cool. I'm not sure if you guys have talked about that. Yeah. I don't mean to take over your show, guys. You can kick me out whenever.
We're about to wrap.
You're really just using me here to stretch out the hour long of content.
No, Logan, what minute are we at?
We're way.
We are 81 minutes. 81. In.
Yeah, this is our average tight hour rip.
You guys aren't average.
Peace and love, freaks. Dickie.